This is a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. Go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
Hi, Elva. Thanks so much for coming on the show and agreeing to talk to me. I'm really looking forward to hearing what you've got to say. Let's start with how you first became actively involved in the feminist movement and what was the impetus for your involvement?
Well, what happened was Zelda Prano, who I didn't know at the time, chained herself to the Commonwealth Building in Melbourne about halfway through October in 69. And she was protesting at the equal pay case in 1969 that came to the arbitration court. And by that ruling, only about 18 to 20% of women would have got equal pay. And I saw her photo in the paper and I thought, well, this is not right. You know, I was teaching at the time and we were just about to get equal pay by 71. And it was being phased in. And so I thought, well, this is disgraceful that, you know, all these women, 80% of women are not going to get equal pay. So I thought, okay, I'll ring up Zelda and I'll see how we go and maybe we can do something together. So I rang her up and then we met and we decided that we would do a similar thing at the arbitration court building at the end of October. And my flatmate, my housemate, Selma Solomon, decided that she would join us as well. So that was the end of October 79. And after that, I met Zelda a few times and then we just chatted about women in particular and we decided that really an organisation was needed to try and do something about all of the discrimination that women suffered at the time. People today have got no idea what it was like for women in the 70s, 60s and 70s. So anyway, we decided that we would start an organisation after the holidays. And I could talk about the ASIO listening to Zelda's and my conversation in January, but I don't know whether you want to hear that or not.
Actually, that sounds really interesting. I think we'd love to hear about that.
Okay, well, Zelda was in the Communist Party at the time, and because my brother had been in it for a while, I wasn't frightened of the Communist Party. I didn't want to join, but, you know, I'd heard about it. It didn't worry me. So because she was in the Communist Party, she knew her phone was tapped. And so she said, now, I know my phone will be tapped. And she said, when we hear the click, I'll talk about my abortions. And so she used to, and she used to go into great detail because she'd had two or three abortions, illegally, of course, at that time. And then so she'd talk about that. I'd be quiet. And then we'd hear the click and they'd clicked off because they couldn't stand to listen any longer. And then we would continue on with our conversation. And so we met, we sort of talked over January and February several times, really to buck ourselves up and talked about what we were going to do in this organisation. So in March, I think it was the 2nd, we met, we advertised a little and we met at Thelma and my place in Carlton and 14 women turned up. And one of those women was Bon Hull. And she was really interested. She was the main one who was interested. It was really funny because some people left early because we were too political. Some women left because we weren't political enough. And some people left because we didn't hate men. So it was really, it was quite funny. So anyway, there were 14 came to the first meeting. And then after that, Bon talked to us and said, well, look, she would have the next meeting at her place. And so because she was really enthusiastic. And so we had it at her place and she advertised, she thought there would be the hordes would come. So she hired 100 chairs and only 12 people turned up. But that was our second meeting. So from then on, we sort of met every 2 weeks or so for a couple of years and organised all sorts of things. We averaged about 10 people at our meetings. We had about 20 or 30 on the books, but some would come a little while and disappear and come back in the women's movement when it got going later on, and some we never saw again. So, yes, it was the sort of, we were the four mainstays, or, you know, the four amigos or whatever you like to call us.
That's incredible. being the initiators of such an important thing like that hadn't been done before, well, not that century. That's pretty impressive. So just wondering, how did your family react?
Well, as I said before, my brother had been in the Communist Party for a little while, and I'd listened to what he had to say when I was younger, and I thought, oh, well, it sounds okay, you know. And my mother was somewhere left of the ALP, and my father, he said he was a socialist. And so we didn't talk about it a lot, but I guess I'd gleaned a lot from that, and grew up, you know. By the time I was 14 or so, I knew that I was some sort of waffly socialist, and I was, what else was I? Well, I was sort of a feminist, definitely. And so, you know, it was sort of natural for me to sort of be interested in organising something with Zelda, because she was very enthusiastic, of course, and so was Bon and Thelma. Mm-hmm.
So
were, yeah.
Given that your family was already, well, some of them were socialists, communists, sounds like they were all communists, including your brother.
Oh, no. My mother...
Oh, yeah.
She was more left of centre, more left of the ALP. My father was definitely a socialist. My other brother was right wing.
Oh, wow.
And then the one brother had been in the Communist Party for a while. But I don't know that he was in it for a long time, but he was in it for a while, I know.
Was he supportive? So I guess, you
know, well, no, not exactly. He said to my mother once, oh, you know, Alva's not going to get anywhere doing all those demonstrations and things that she does. And I said to Mum, well, I don't care what he thinks, really.
What did you actually really say to your mum?
Oh, no, I don't think I'll use that word, but you can imagine what it was. I was quite annoyed, actually.
I'll bet you were. So interesting that, so the Communist Party in general obviously weren't terribly supportive of women's equality or women's rights.
No, they weren't. And neither were none of the other left-wing. See, there were lots of, you probably know, but at that time, there were several left-wing groups, and they would pop up at different times, and then they split the next month because they all argued about their theory.
Yeah.
You know, there was a sort of Trotskyist group, and there was a Marxist group, there was a Leninist group, there was a Communist Party, there was the New Left.
Yeah.
And so there were all these people arguing among each other, and they kept on splitting and splitting and splitting. Then they join another group, you know, it was crazy. And so eventually, of course, those women got sick of being in those groups, and a lot of them did, and realised they were being second-class citizens within the left wing instead of it all being equal. It wasn't, you know, a fairer society for them, because they were making the tea and making the men happy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was going to say there's a saying that, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners have heard it, if the left organise a firing squad, they form a circle. Sounds like the left was a little bit like that. But I was just wondering, in the women's movement, was that a bit different? I'd sort of like to think that women are better at working together towards a common goal. Do you think that was the case with the women's movement?
Definitely. Yeah. There were many, let's say, arguments, discussions. Mm-hmm. And so what would happen in 1972, we organised a few groups by then, and we organised the Women's Centre in Little Latrobe Street. And we would have a meeting, say, every 2 weeks. And a lot of the women came in from various left-wing groups, as I said, but many of us didn't. Mm-hmm. And I didn't belong to a group, and a lot of the women had come in via consciousness-raising groups, which I can talk about later, and they were really not particularly political. So the left-wing people came in with a theory, you know, that had been handed down, whatever the theory was, and they would try and espouse that and say things like, well, we'll never get women's liberation until we get a revolution. But I wasn't prepared to wait for that. It seemed to me there wasn't going to be a revolution for at least the next 50 years, which is already up, and, of course, there's nowhere near a revolution in Australia. So most of us thought, well, let's just get on with what we do agree with.
Yep.
And so, as I said, by 1975, there were all these action groups, or all the CR groups, and thousands took part in our demonstrations. Sometimes, you know.
I watched the film documentary Brazen Hussies on your recommendation, which I highly recommend, especially to young people who maybe have not heard so much about the women's liberation movement. Mm-hmm. I found it really informative and really interesting. And one of the things that really struck me was how it showed the awakening of young women to the idea that things didn't have to be and shouldn't remain the way they were. And you mentioned consciousness raising groups.
Yes.
Can you talk a bit more about that and how they did help to raise awareness?
Yes, well, they sort of sprung up at the same time as the general groups got going around. See, in the beginning, in the 70s, WAC started, Women's Action Committee. But at the same time, which we didn't know, there'd also been a group started at Melbourne Uni, and I think there was one in Carlton grew up that year too, early on. And they were theoretical. So they were sitting down, they were really consciousness-raising groups. Now, how the idea spread to the suburbs, I really don't know, but it did. And so, you know, for example, there was one at Box Hill. Now, that in the 1970s, that was an outlander community. It was hardly part of Melbourne at all. I mean, now it's probably an inner suburb, but at that time it wasn't. And so there were groups all over Melbourne, and they were consciousness raising, and they started off as discussion groups. And so they discussed things like most of them realised there was something wrong with women's lives. Most of them realised that there was something wrong with women's lives and they wanted to change it. So they discussed things like, why were they feeling that way? What could they do to change anything? What would help them stop feeling that way? I remember one lady said to me, she had a good husband, but she felt tied to the kitchen all the time. She just couldn't, you know, whatever she did, she just couldn't get away. And I think a lot of women felt that way because, you know, once you have two or three children and a husband, then that's what was expected of you. You stayed home and you did all the housework and the child rearing and you didn't go out to work. So they talked about, they mostly wanted a wider society. They wanted an in to the rest of society. They just didn't want to be home all the time, considered as second class citizens, considered only intelligent enough to run after the kids, etc. And they wanted more. And so they went through all of that. Some of them lasted two or three years in the consciousness raising groups, but at the same time, most of them started coming into the action groups as well and the demonstrations.
It sounds like the left in general, I presume mainly the men, who I guess were the leaders in the left movement, while they were waiting for a revolution, sounds like you women were creating your own revolution straight away, and it sounds like it worked. A treat. So,
well, it
did.
Well, what I always say is that the Women's Liberation Movement was one of the most important social movements of the 20th century. Unfortunately, today, many people don't know anything about it or very little.
Mm.
They know about the suffragettes, but they really don't know about the women's movement in the 1970s, 80s and 90s. And it really needs to get out there more.
Mm. Yeah, and you've been certainly helping with that. Your archive of all your writing, and I noticed it said jewellery as well is in the State Library archives. Can you tell us a bit about what's in the archives?
A few of Zelda's and all of mine are at the State Library of Victoria. They're in the archives, and you can order them to go and see them and read them. You can't take them out. But there are a lot of them, and I had collected them when I was in Melbourne because I had intended writing a bit of a history, but it never got done. I interviewed I interviewed about 12 women, and then I collected all the leaflets that I could find, the pamphlets, buttons, you know, and posters and all sorts of things. So I had all those, and I brought them with me when I moved to northern New South Wales, fortunately. And then I started writing it again later on.
So when the jewellery that's mentioned, are they the buttons that...
I think they'd be the buttons. Right. Okay. I think the only other jewellery would be, I know I had, I put into the library, there's also some of my stuff at Melbourne University. Most of the women have put their archives into the Melbourne University archives.
Right.
But unfortunately, at the time I wanted to do that, I didn't get a reply when I wrote to see if they wanted them. So mine ended up in the library. So there's two lots. Most of them are in the Melbourne University. The only jewellery I can think of was there were several badges made with the symbol, with the women's fist of the women and the women's symbol.
Yep.
You know the one I'm talking
yes,
about.
Yes, absolutely.
And yeah, so that's the only one. I had a very nice one. In fact, I still think I've got one. And they were about 5 centimetres across,
yep.
And they were enamel, and they had the symbol in the middle.
Right.
But apart from that, most of them were buttons, like pro-abortion, pro-childcare,
yep.
All those equal pay, all those things.
Yep, we kind of still need all of those, actually.
Perhaps yeah, we well, there are lots.
A reprint of them there. All.
Yeah, I took them down there too.
Great. Right. Getting back to, you know, the women's liberation revolution,
mm-hmm.
When Gough Whitlam was elected in 1972, did it bring great hope to you all, especially with the appointment the following year of Elizabeth Reid as advisor on the welfare of women and children, which was a world first?
Yes, it was a world first. Look, as far as I could understand at the time, we didn't take terribly much notice of Gough because, I mean, people would have been pleased that he was in rather than the Liberal Party, who did nothing for women. But we didn't take a lot of notice because we were too busy doing what we were doing. Mm-hmm. And we didn't think that government would do very much. But, of course, gradually Gough did. And actually, when you read the things that Gough talked about and did, he really understood what we're on about. He really understood that women wanted to acknowledge for other things rather than being mothers and housewives. Mm. And therefore he appointed Elizabeth Reid, and I'm sure she must have educated him a lot.
Mm.
And we didn't take much notice of Elizabeth either, because there was a term that was used in the women's movement at the time called Femocrat. I don't know if you've heard that. It was almost a derogatory term.
Right.
And it was meant to explain women who went into the usual political parties, etc., and tried to change things through that.
Yep.
And a lot of women in the movement were very hard line, and they just dismissed them.
Right.
Whereas I was always thinking, well, look, she might not be able to do any good, but she might.
Right.
So I'm not going to say anything. And of course, when she got demoted, as she did, then a lot of women, of course, were very sad, because they started to realise that it was better to have someone in the powers of be than not have anybody at all.
Mm.
You know?
Do you feel she got a lot of support while she was in? Look,
I'm not sure. I from what I've read, she might have got more support from the Canberra people.
Mm-hmm.
The women's liberation there, and maybe even the Sydney people, but not. No, I've read things from the Melbourne people who really were critical of her situation. You know, that position, not her in particular, not her as a person, but that position.
Yeah.
But then, of course, when she got demoted, then we all said, "Oh, what a dreadful thing to happen."
Mm. Yeah, that's what was going to be my next question. Did things change for the movement when Elizabeth Reid was forced to resign, and then not long after that, the Whitlam government was kicked out?
Well, it did. But as I said, you know, we were so busy doing what we wanted to do, and because a lot of women at the movement didn't take much a huge amount of faith in what government could do and would do. It wasn't as dramatic as you might have thought, although we were, you know, there were demonstrations against, what was his name? Malcolm Turnbull. No, not
Fraser,
Turnbull.
Yeah.
Malcolm Fraser. Yes. So, yeah, that was the sort of situation. And we were so busy, you know. We had so many activity groups going on, and some of the women, they worked tirelessly. You know, the women who got women into shelters and the women who ran the women's health centre. Now, Bond was very involved in the women's health centre and also the working women's group. So she did a lot. And so those women, they were working so hard, you know, they really worked, you know, 24 hours a day for no money, some of them.
Yeah, so maybe it was just as well there was that underlying view of Femocrats, as you said, because, you know, you might be able to rely on a particular government for a short time, but it's certainly not governments are certainly not to be relied on in the long term.
No, well, that's true.
Yeah.
But anyway, I think that she probably did a lot of good, and I'm sure that she would have been outspoken within Labor Party, well, government, when Whitlam was in, and changed a lot of people's attitudes. Now, whether she changed Whitlam or he was already changed, I'm not sure, but he certainly got what we're on about.
Yeah. Given that he even wanted to appoint a woman in that position, I suppose, is a good sign from the start.
And then he put millions into the Women's Conference, the International Women's Women Politics Conference in 1975 in Canberra. And women from all over Australia were invited, from the YWCA, from the CWA, all sorts of groups were invited, people, and people from overseas as well. And they gave papers, and it was a wonderful time, actually, except, of course, the press were against this, spending all that money on women. And the Canberra Times, we had a demonstration to the Canberra Times. We had a sit-in there because they were giving us such a bad rap at the a conference. So it got a bad rap from a lot of people. But, you know, it did a lot of good. There were lots of groups grew out of it too.
I suppose it's not surprising it got a lot of bad rap from the press, because certainly at the time the press was made up of mostly men.
Yes, there were a few good reporters.
Yep.
Claudia Wright was one of them.
Yep.
And there was a lady who used to write the women's column. Unfortunately, I've forgotten her name. But, we got a terrible time from the press. You know, I remember we had our first pro-abortion demonstration, and there were about 500 women, because we used to count them, you know, get a vague idea of how many were there. And I think there were about 500 women, and the press hardly mentioned it at all, the demonstration. And then one of them said, about 200 barefooted women marched through the streets of Melbourne against the abortion laws.
Isn't it funny how being a barefooted or a hippie is supposed to be such a negative thing? Because now,
it sort of was, because, you know, in the 60s and also in the early 70s, when you went into the city, it was a big deal for women. They wore stockings and gloves and hats and their best clothes.
Yep.
And so when we were on demonstrations, there was nobody hardly in a dress, unless it was a hippie sort of a dress.
Yep.
And some didn't have a bra on, but most of us did. And there was hardly a lipstick amongst us, but there were a few. And so we were much more colourful, you know, than the average woman who was, you know, uptight with her girdle on.
Yes. And were any of you actually barefooted?
I don't remember. I certainly wasn't. It would hurt. I didn't want that, thanks.
Was there anybody, man who was particularly supportive in the press or in public life?
Not that I remember.
Oh, interesting.
There probably was. There was some sort of a bit in both camps, you know. And what they hated most was not being allowed to come to our meetings or our demonstrations. Yeah. That really riled them.
A bit of their own medicine. They didn't like it.
Oh, yeah. No, that was really a no-no for them. That's why they were so – that was one of the reasons they were so anti, because they just weren't allowed in. I remember we had a big Australia-wide conference in end of 71, and there was a man came in and sat in a chair and he wouldn't leave. Mm-hmm. And so he said, if you have a vote and vote against me, then I'll go. But it took him a long time, so we did have a vote and threw him out. But, of course, that causes another anti-women's liberation report in the page, in the reviews.
Yeah. Well, I guess that they should really understand what it's like to exclude people, considering women weren't allowed to drink in bars.
That's right.
Yeah.
Which reminds me, I talk about some of the things that we actually did in those first couple of years?
Yes, please.
Okay, well, in WAC, the Women's Action Committee, we started off pretty early because we were action group. We weren't a discussion group. Because I think probably because we were mainly older than the ones that started in groups around Australia, around Melbourne, and we were sort of, I think Bon was in her 50s, Zelda was in her 40s, and Thelma and I were in our 30s, and most of the other women who came were 30s and 40s, I think. And the women that were in the groups around the university, of course, they were in their 20s, early 20s. So we were an action group. We weren't a discussion group. And so the first thing we did was we had a pub crawl, and we got thrown out of two pubs, and they said there were no... One of the excuses was there were no toilets. That's always a good one. There are no toilets for women, and they'd get the police if we didn't go. So we went to three. The last one took us in. That was the first demo. Then we had one. This is only WAC, mind you, and only four or five of us. We had a demonstration on the balcony of the what's that hall in Victoria Street. I'll think of it later. Anyway, it's a big hall, and we had a demonstration against the Miss Teenage Quest because we didn't agree with that sort of thing. And then we had, we went on, the one that's advertised a lot, and it does seem to get people's imaginations, is we went on a couple of tram rides, and we wanted to pay 3/4 of the fare because women only got 3/4 of a wage. We got a children's ticket given to us. We got threatened with taking us to court afterwards, but that never happened. And so that was WAC. That was how we got going. And then, of course, the other groups, as I said in the beginning, they were mainly discussion groups around the uni and Carlton, but they eventually joined us. And by 1971, there were enough groups in Melbourne to start having a meeting together. So we had meetings once a month, I think. And then, of course, at the beginning of 72, we got enough people together to pay for a centre in Little Latrobe Street.
Right.
And then, of course, we had more demonstrations after that as well.
Fantastic.
So it was an interesting time. It was a little bit worrying, but it was, we had right on our side, we thought.
Absolutely. And such clever and actions that were really right to the point, that really would be very hard to argue against, like 3/4 pay that men get, so pay 3/4 of the fare. Amazing. Did you all think of the actions together, or how did with those ideas?
More or less. I mean, Zelda thought of a few because she'd been in the union and fighting in the union for 30 years or so, whereas, you know, the teachers' unions was fairly quiet, although there was a women's group started up within the union, and that got poo-pooed within the union too. And, Zelda did think of a few, but we all sat round and decided what we wanted to do. Unfortunately, many of the women wouldn't join us because, this is in WAC, because they were too frightened. You know, they'd never done anything like it. And they just weren't confident enough.
Yeah.
So it usually ended up four or five of us in the demonstrations.
Yeah.
In the beginning.
Yep. It sounds like a lot of fun, actually. Was it fun or was it a lot of
it was
fairly
fun.
Scary?
It was fun. No, it wasn't that scary. Yep. I mean, we just thought we were right.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. When you know that you're right, it's so much easier to be, to do things that would normally take a lot of bravery.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, absolutely. Just getting back to Zelda, as I'm sure you know, there's a Zelda Di Prano statue standing outside Trades Hall in Melbourne.
Yes.
As a monument to her outstanding contribution towards equal pay and rights for women. And the statue depicts Zelda with a large chain around her waist, as she was when she first chained and padlocked herself to the doors of a government building, which hindered the entrance and exit of workers. I like the way she says that the workers had to sort of bend right down and squat to walk under the chains. Must have been a lot of fun. Now, we've got some new anti-protest laws recently passed in Victoria, in line with all the other states. And they're pretty draconian and just getting worse and worse. Under those laws, it would be a crime to use chains and lock-on devices in a peaceful protest. And in fact, I think it's even a crime to carry them if you're under suspicion that you might be using them in a protest. It's, you know, really pretty insane, and there's a lot of groups trying to fight against those laws. What do you think about this, and what do you reckon Zelda would have said if she were here now?
Well, I live in northern New South Wales, so we didn't get that information here that I know of. I listened to the ABC, and I don't think it was on the ABC because, you know, it's all very state-centred, a lot of this stuff. You know, they don't spread it around unless there's a bomb or something. And so, look, all I can think of is that Zelda would have thought that was anti-equality. You know, if you can't protest in a country for the things that you believe in without bombs, you know, I'm not talking about people who want to blow things up, but I'm talking about peaceful protest, then you're losing out on democracy, really. And I think Zelda would not have approved of it, but I mean, obviously I can't speak for her. Now, did you mention something about putting an apron on her and somebody protested about that?
I did, yes. I don't know how well publicised it was. I don't think the media, certainly in Victoria, pays too much attention to things unless there's some excitement or arrests happening. But I thought it was a really clever thing to do. A group of women activists put an apron on the statue of Grace of Zelda on a couple of days before International Women's Day, and the apron had printed on it "Difficult Woman," obviously referring to what Grace Tame, what was said about Grace Tame by the Prime Minister. I think that was a great thing, and not that I knew Zelda, but I reckon she'd have a good old giggle about that and would approve.
Well, I think she would have laughed at the apron because, of course, that was exactly what we wanted to get away from.
Yeah, yep.
So I think she would have seen the irony. Zelda had a wonderful sense of humour. We'd had lots of laughs. People, you know, are sour old women's liberationists. Yeah. And we weren't sour at all. We had lots of great fun. Yeah. You know, we laughed and we just laughed at the irony of things, and and that it spurred us on, you know, that sort of stuff. But goodness me, I don't think she'd have worried about wearing an apron. She just laughed.
No, well, there were certain members of the community who were very upset about that.
Well, it's not as if they're going to paint something on her.
No,
I mean,
exactly.
I don't believe in defacing statues, and I don't believe in knocking them over either.
Mm.
And if you don't believe in the philosophy, then you have to put a sign that says the truth.
Mm.
You
mm.
know, for example, statues of Captain Cook, as far as I'm concerned, they stay.
Mm.
But if you want to, you can... Well, you can write the truth underneath it.
Mm.
Actually, what happened to Captain Cook when Captain Cook came here?
Yeah.
Or well, the white people came and took over.
Mm. Mm.
So yeah, I don't believe in defacing statues or pulling them down. But I'm in an apron. Goodness me, that takes 2 seconds to get it off.
Exactly.
You don't want it there.
No. Okay, now you've written a couple of volumes on the history of the women's liberation movement, and I know they're available. There are not many copies printed, so they're available to read in the state library and a couple of universities, I think. Which I think would be really interesting, because I think at the time you wrote it, there wasn't any history of the women's liberation movement written, which is pretty amazing for such a significant and sort of revolutionary movement.
Well, the funny thing was that there are lots of books written, and some of them ignore Melbourne altogether, and they concentrate on Sydney, and I don't know why, but mostly they're written by maybe Sydney and Canberra people, I'm not sure. Some of them mention Canberra quite a lot, that group.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them mention Adelaide. They hardly mention Melbourne at all, the ones that I've looked at.
Mm-hmm.
And so the one I wrote was based on the archives that I brought up here from Melbourne. As I said, I brought quite a lot up here. And the first one was called The Women's Action Committee and the Women's Liberation Movement, Melbourne, 1969 to 1972. And it's in two volumes. And the second volume is a lot of photos from the time. The first volume is generally about the WAC and the general women's liberation, how it got going, etc. And the second one also, as well as photos, it's got a few profiles and interviews that I did with people when I was lived in Melbourne. So that one was just printed by me locally here, and there are only about 7 copies made, I think, altogether. A couple of people have got private ones, and the others are in the libraries, the State Library and the Melbourne University, but they're only in the archives, so you can't take them out.
Sure.
Now, the next one I didn't write. It's actually an anthology. And we're looking for a publisher at the moment, actually, but it's, well, we think it's wonderful. It's got 22 stories by 22 women who were actually involved in the movement in the 70s, 80s and 90s in Melbourne. And it talks about their work in the movement, how they got involved, talks about their families, talks about how they got involved, why they got involved, what they did in the movement, and what they did after the shouting stopped, you know.
Yep.
Because we were a very noisy lot until about 2000, and then, of course, people got involved in other things.
Mm.
And honestly, the things that these women did after 2000 are just wonderful. One person made films on women. One person started a printing press and only printed feminist-type information books. Look, it's just incredible. Some of them were involved in helping migrants, et cetera, et cetera. So the end of my story, I wrote, once a feminist, always a feminist. And I think that sort of sums us up.
Yep. Fantastic.
Because, you know, we really were. Anyway, we haven't got a name for that one yet, but it will be something like Women's Liberation, the Second Wave of Feminism. Something like that. Because that will depend a lot when we get a publisher, because we have to cooperate with them on a name as well as many other things. And we're hoping that we will get a lot of photos into it as well, because I'm a visual person.
Yep.
And I think every picture tells a story. And there are some wonderful things there.
Yep.
Wonderful photos. So
yep.
It's going to be really interesting, I think. And So what we need now is somebody to publish it for us.
And when you do find a publisher, and I'm sure you will, and in fact there might be some people in the literary world listening to 3CR right now who know just the person or who are the person. So, yeah, if anybody's listening who's a publisher or involved in publishing, give Elva a call. And I hopefully it will be there'll be lots of copies published. Is that your plan? Because I, for one, would love to buy one.
Yeah, we're sort of thinking about 2,000 at this stage, but it also depends on the publisher, I guess. And
Great. Well, I'm really looking forward to reading that, and I love, like I think a lot of people do, photos. You know, from the time, and you, as you said, photos really tell 1,000 stories or some expression like that.
The only problem with the photos is, and you'll find that a lot of women's books, women's liberation books and feminist books, don't have photos because they cost a lot of money.
Right. Yeah.
So, you know, they cost extra because the pages have to be really good quality.
Yeah.
And you know, can be set differently and all sorts of things. So that's the problem with photos, but we're hoping that we will get enough money and we will be able to publish it.
Have you applied for a government grant for the book?
No, if you know anybody who knows how to do that, then we would be interested in that as well.
Oh, well, the 3CR community will put our heads together and see what we can come up with.
And and hurry up, because I'm 90 and I'd like to see them published before then.
Right, okay. We've
before
got a mission.
I leave this wonderful place that we're in.
Doesn't sound like you'll be doing that anytime soon.
Hope not to.
As they
too
say,
much to do.
Old feminists never die.
This is true.
Yes.
They fade away.
They don't fade away. They, I don't know. We'll think of something to end that little axiom. Okay, is there anything else that you'd like to say?
Not really. You did mention to me once that Bond wasn't mentioned a lot.
Yeah, that's right.
I really would like to put in a plug for Bond because, in fact, she was a wonderful person. She was very empathetic to everybody. She did a lot for women's health in that women's health group. She wrote lots of letters to the paper in the early days about all sorts of things. And she had a pseudonym. I think it was called Mary Miller. And Zelda had a pseudonym as well because they thought that they wouldn't be able to get published every week. They wrote so many letters, gave lots and lots of speeches, and she wrote a book called In Our Own Hands, which was all about women's health. And she was also involved in the working women's group that we had going too. So she's not forgotten by us, and I can tell you that there are many in the movement who remember her very fondly.
Great.
She was a good person.
Yeah. Amazing. Sounds like there were a lot of you very, very good people that we should all be very grateful to. All right. Well, we might finish it there. Thank you so much for talking to us. That was so interesting. And as I said before, Brazen Hussies, which is a documentary available on ABC iView, in which you feature Elva. It's such a great film, so entertaining and so informative. So I suggest men and women should all watch it. Thanks again.
You're welcome. Look, I mean, it's not something I do every day, and it's not something I'm terribly good at, but you know, I think the more we get the word out. Because, you know, it's so important that people know about what happened in the past so that they can build on it, you know. I mean, a lot of people are building on it.
Exactly.
And, you know, the more women build on it, then the better it will be for all of us.
Absolutely. Because as we all know, there's still a long way to go before we get equality with men.
I know. And
I reckon until there is equality, the world's going to continue to be a pretty problematic place for the general population.
Yes, all right. Well, from one difficult woman to another, thank you very much for the interview.
Thank you so much.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.